Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. This is about empowering people all over the world. We're the number one listened to progressive radio program on the planet. People listening over the telephone, downloading the shows, and sharing the information. This week alone, I presented three original, in-depth investigative reports. Please download them from PRN.FM and share them. You see, there is a silent revolution occurring in America. A revolution of information, inspiration, love, and peace. We're not at war. We don't believe in a war on cancer and a war on poverty and a war on discrimination. We believe in understanding the problems and resolving them, going to the heart of why is someone prejudiced, why is someone making a decision to cheer on a war against Yemen, cheer on a war that would cause Venezuela to have millions of its poor become even poorer and killed if we invade. So wars on drugs don't work. Wars on poverty don't work. Helping those who are poor does work. Building infrastructure works. Understanding what people's essential needs works. That's what we do every day. We begin with the latest on health and healing, and because I've done so many intense programs this week, including our Progressive Commentary Hour, which some of you to local stations heard yesterday, today, I'm going to take more calls, share a little different information. But next week, we come right back at you. Four straight days of original, in-depth investigative reports on death by medicine. Four different hours on what's wrong with a medical industrial complex that could cause you to die or be injured under chronic care. From Turin University Medical Sciences, why melatonin is a powerful anti-cancer endoamine. Now, amine, A-M-I-N-E, at the end of a word means amino acid. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal Toxicology and Applied Pharmacology. A team of researchers from Iran suggest that melatonin, that's what you secrete when you're asleep at night from the pineal gland, has powerful anti-cancer properties. They looked at the molecular anti-angiogenesis pathways mediated by melatonin and the responsible mechanisms in different ways. Just as a little overview, when you go to bed at night, if you have the lights out so it's dark, if you don't have noise, and if you're not trying to digest a big meal, then you'll have a normal sleep pattern. Melatonin, the hormone produced by the pineal gland, will process diverse biological activities, including what we didn't know but now do, strong anti-tumor action. Melatonin exerts its anti-cancer effects by inhibiting angiogenesis. Angio, A-N-G-I-O, genesis, G-E-N-E-S-I-S. An increased angiogenesis is a primary feature of tumor progression, meaning you stop the cancer's blood supply so you're starving it. And for this reason, angiogenesis inhibition is a critical step to treating cancer. Melatonin targets nutrients and oxygen supply to cancer cells. And the main targets of melatonin for inhibition of angiogenesis are hypoxia-induced factor 1-alpha and the disease under its control, which is the vascular endothelial growth factor. So melatonin inhibits this translocation and the endothelial cell migration, invasion, and tube formation. In conclusion, when you have melatonin, And if you're not producing it because you're waking up during the night, then take 1 to 2 milligrams because you can fight various cancers. From the University of Colorado, published in Current Biology, comes a study about sleeping in, as a lot of people do on the weekends, will not repay your sleep debt. A lot of people think, it's the weekend, I'm going to sleep in 2 extra hours. It will not change anything at the biological level. In fact, on some health measures, trying to play catch-up for a few days and then returning to poor sleep habits makes things worse. And why? Because the scientists found that common behaviors of burning the candle during the week and then trying to make up for it is actually counterproductive. This is not the first study to show this. You increase your risk of obesity, diabetes, because of this. So just try to get your sleep each night. From the University of South Carolina comes a program once again about the power of a principally plant-based or Mediterranean diet, and it's inversely associated with high aggressive prostate cancer, meaning the more of the healthy diet you have, the less progressive prostate cancer you have. That's important. Now, we know that there are certain foods that have anti-cancer properties, and we know that the more of these we consume, the less cancer we're likely to get, because we have identified at least some of these anti-cancer, like indole-3-carbinol, isothiocyanates. These are some of the chemicals in, let's say, kale, the radish family, all radishes, mustard, and astragalus. You also have, which is an herb, you have broccoli, cabbage, which is also in that same group, the indole group. You also have the sulfur group, which is very powerful anti-cancer, onions, shallots, and garlic. And I would add, there's 2 types of parsnips that would also be in there. But for most people, those are the ones that are really most likely to be consumed. Of course, the superstar of all of it is broccoli sprouts. Having one little box of about 3 ounces of broccoli sprouts twice a week would do a great deal of benefit to super boost your immune system, purify your body. Then if you want to have broccoli, steam it. Don't eat it raw. Also, asparagus, steam it. Brussels sprouts, steam them. Cauliflower, steam them. Then when you have them, it makes a big difference. Okay? So these are the things that if we're eating them, we're going to have a lower risk of prostate cancer. From the Korean Institute of Toxicology, published in the Journal of Medicinal Food, they studied fermented foods to see which ones had the best anti-obesity effects. And they found one, the black choke berry, choke, C-H-O-K-E, berry. And it has anti-obesity effects. So that's good. We can't get the chokeberry here. At least I'm not aware if it's grown here. I haven't seen it. It's grown mainly in Central and Eastern European countries. It's really high in polyphenolic compounds, and they're responsible for the health benefits. It has a very bitter taste, but it's also known as a functional food. It can actually function in a good way in your body. And researchers from South Korea reduced the bitter taste of black chokeberries by fermenting them. And then they looked at the effects of fermented black chokeberries, and they found as long as it didn't have that bitter taste, it really impacts your insulin sensitivity level, which in turn impacts your weight gain. So something new you didn't know about that will help you if you're overweight. I do not believe that we have a specific biological condition called schizophrenia. I believe that it's really more accurate to have a combination of brain dysfunctions that represent what we call schizophrenia. But the University of Messina in Italy found that bergamot, B-E-R-G-A-M-O-T, improves brain function if you're manifesting these symptoms. Now, bergamot oranges are bitter fruits. They grow in one of the world's most beautiful coastal regions. And if you've ever had the opportunity to drive up the coast of Italy, which I've done several times, you have this absolutely bucolic sense. On the one side, you're looking at pastures that have been farmed for thousands of years. And I remember once stopping the car. My brothers were in the car, and some friends who were Italian from the United States, whose families live in Italy. And I said, it's the middle of August. You're smelling the Mediterranean coming in one side of the car, but you're also smelling the wheat on the other side. So we pulled in, and where there's a little roadside restaurant, a little tiny restaurant. I think it had like three chairs inside, three tables inside, but it was mainly where you sat on a little balcony overlooking the Mediterranean. But instead of while they were all there, and what was interesting when we went into the restaurant, they had a very limited menu. It was just a board that was handed to us, and on it were some of the dishes that day. And they did everything fresh. Everything was fresh. Whatever they found that morning, you know, whatever the fishermen brought in, that's what they had. And that's what this older woman, who I'm guessing at the time she was in her 70s or 80s, was able to do. And she was a master chef. And she made for the others who do not follow my diet, and none of my friends or family follow my diet, but she made a wonderful vegan dish for me. But I went out and sat in the field. And while I'm out sitting in this field under this tree, if you close your eyes, you hear the clacking of the wheat when it's dry and ready to be harvested. And you can smell that earthiness. And the locusts I could hear. And then you look across and you feel the warm breeze off the Mediterranean. It's just one of the most memorable moments of my life. And so if you ever have a chance, put it on your bucket list. Go to Italy and drive the entire coast, and then drive back up and go over to the East Coast to Venice. And don't go to Venice in tourist season. The best time to visit Venice is out of season, because then it's not crowded and you can take your time. In any case, this is where the bergamot oranges are, and there's all these different types of citrus essences. And a recent study aimed at developing new treatment strategies for cognitive dysfunctions, and they hit upon this very promising potential with bergamot. And the citrus extracts, best known for flavoring, what is it? Earl Green tea, that's what it is. Cultivated exclusively on the coast in southern Italy, the bergamot orange yields a bitter fruit that possesses magical properties. The essential oils extracted from its thick rind are added to products like flavoring and perfumes, and just as natural oils, you can get bergamot oil. So here's what we know now about this bergamot. It keeps cancer cells from spreading in colorectal cancer. It reduces your blood lipids in people with abnormally high cholesterol. It inhibits the growth of harmful stomach bacteria known to cause peptic ulcers, like Helicobacter E. pylori. It eradicates cancer stem cells, the progenitor of cancer. It also protects your lungs against oxidative injury. It's essential in aromatherapy. It improves mental health. So it's this intersection of mental health and bergamot that is featured in the study. It's a non-pharmaceutical, non-drug approach, and it's showing benefit. It boosts the brain. Researchers studied 20 patients with extreme brain abnormalities manifesting in diagnosis of schizophrenia, and they were currently taking second-generation drugs called atypical antipsychotics. And second-generation antipsychotics are a class of medication that are more recent in their development as opposed to the older first generation of, or atypical, or typical antipsychotics. Both generations' medication function by blocking dopamine receptors, However, atypical antipsychotics do not produce the motor control disabilities that are frequently imparted by typical antipsychotics. So they looked and found very high polyphenolic fractions. And so they gave the 1,000 milligrams, or 1 milligram, that's it, 1 milligram, that's a tiny amount of bergamot. And they saw some substantial responses. So just something to share with you. I like to share some of the best of the newest things happening in the world. And also from the Medical Center of Malaysia comes an article about the biological activities of oleocanthal. Oleo, O-L-E-O, canthal, C-A-N-T-H-A-L. Where do you get oleocanthal? You get it from olive oil. According to the report out of Chiris, Malaysia, the oleocanthal, which is a part of olive oil with a strong anti-inflammatory activity, and it helps with a lot of the anti-inflammatory actions in the body. So if you want an antioxidant, antimicrobial, anti-cancer, neuroprotective, and anti-inflammatory, they're all in oleocanthal, which is in olive oil. So when you're taking extra virgin olive oil, you are helping the body. And boy, it's strong neurological, because it has an impact on Alzheimer's disease. It can improve the clearance of amyloid beta protein from the neurons and reduce the inflammation of the astrocytes. And so, a lot of good. And finally, fiber reduces inflammation and reduces the risk of inflammatory diseases and the rate of death. This is the University of Navarra, which is in Spain. Cardiovascular disease is one of the leading causes of death worldwide. People who have cardiovascular disease also have a higher risk of developing complications from it, which includes hypertension, or abnormally high blood pressure, and diabetes and hyperlipidemia, which is abnormally high blood cholesterol. And a study reports that having a fiber-rich diet lowers the risk of contracting chronic congestive heart failure and cardiovascular disease and type 2 diabetes. So the researchers were part of a joint project with other universities, and they published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, and they found that it really makes a difference. So a big difference. So if you want a healthier body, and I mean a much healthier body, then fiber, generally 30 to 50 grams of fiber a day, will help get you there. One last thing from West Virginia University. Meditation and music improve the quality of life for older people with cognitive decline. I'm Gary Null. We're going to take a break and come back. And when we do, we're going to go right into your questions. Please stay with us.
Message is for Gary Null. My question is in regards to what are some of the protocols or things you can do to try to reduce the amount of seizures or to eliminate them. You did mention that omega-3s were good and CBD oil. Any other things could you suggest? Thank you.
I would include seizures and epilepsy together. And millions of Americans have this. And millions have recurring seizures. My brother had multiple seizures, my older brother. He would sometimes have 4, 5, 6 seizures a day. He had to be on Dilantin and other medications for years, decades, until one day I said, you know, Howard, it wouldn't hurt you to try something different. So he said, okay. So I gave him a protocol. He tried, and no more seizures. Well, that got his attention. So for those of you who are having seizures, seizures are part of what you have when you have epilepsy. But not all people who have seizures have epilepsy. And even those who do not also have seizures that are not epileptic in nature. An epileptic seizure is a temporary malfunction of the brain caused by uncontrolled electrical activity from the nerve cells in the cerebral cortex. And they can last for a period of time. It generally does not damage the brain, but they can make life really bad for most people. And some people have seizures despite treatment, and they're called intractable epilepsy. And it's always a joy when you see someone's face smiling because they've gone 24 or 48 hours without a seizure because they have been diagnosed with intractable epilepsy. Now, what causes epilepsy is unknown. We are still looking at that. And seizures can occur for no apparent reason, or might be triggered from all kinds of exposures to allergens, drug, alcohol withdrawal, psychiatric medication withdrawal, fevers, hunger, hypoglycemia, infections. Diabetics have a lot. And focal seizures, there are different classifications of seizures, like generalized seizures and focal seizures, and including the absence of seizures and the atonic seizures and tonic seizures and colonic seizures and tonic-clonic seizures. But whatever your seizure might be, and I don't know, you didn't tell me, here are some things that might help you. Because really, this would be important for anyone with epilepsy or a seizure. You start with a non-inflammatory diet, a non-allergenic diet. And how do you know what you're allergic to? Because you could even be allergic to some healthy foods. You do what is called the Koko Pulse test. So how do you do that? Simple. You take a single item of food. Either you put it on your bedside table or you have someone bring it to you in the morning. You wake up. You don't get out of bed. You don't drink anything. You simply take your pulse for 60 seconds. Write it down. Then you take that single item of food. You don't even have to swallow it. Just hold it in your mouth for about 30 seconds and spit it out. Then you wait there in bed without getting up and without doing anything, no exercise, for 20 minutes. Then take your pulse again. If your pulse has gone up more than 5 beats per minute, or I should say 5 beats each time you take it, there's a high probability you're allergic to that. And then what you do, you eliminate that food completely for 1 week. But every day, for at least 10 days, you should take the 10 most common foods and beverages you consume on a daily basis and do the Koko Pulse test with it. So then you go on what is known as an elimination diet, meaning you do not have any food or beverage that increases your pulse 5 beats, or 5 seconds over what it would normally be. Then a week later, you take a large amount of each one of the items that you would normally say cause your pulse to increase. And then you should have a very rapid pulse rate. It should spike up. You might even feel dizzy. You might have itching in the throat. And that means, you're allergic to that. Then you just eliminate that. Now, once you eliminate that, you should go on a slightly alkaline diet. And how you can help do that is each morning have yourself a glass of green juice. I would start with cucumber, celery, green apple, and then 1 teaspoon of lemon juice, 1 teaspoon of apple cider vinegar. That'll alkalize. Helps a lot of people with pain also. I would add, go on a strictly healthy plant-based diet. There are certain herbs I would suggest: alfalfa, sprouts, black cohosh, hyssop, that's H-Y-S-S-O-P, lobelia, L-O-B-E-L-I-A, all very good for epilepsy. And you don't take black cohosh during pregnancy. I would also have probiotics 3 times a day. I would eat a lot of Swiss chard, green leafy vegetables, raw nuts and seeds and soybeans and greens like chard and beet greens. I would drink at least 5 glasses of fresh, what I would call living juices per day. I would eat very small meals. No alcohol, no meat, no dairy, no sugar, no caffeine, no aspartame. I would have about 30 to 40 grams of fiber a day. And there's some nutrients that I have found in my own research will make a difference. L-carnitine, C-A-R-N-I-T-I-N-E. That's an amino acid, and it's very important for giving energy to the heart. L-tyrosine, T-Y-R-O-S-I-N-E, about 500 milligrams, 2-3 times a day. It's very important for brain function. You don't take tyrosine if you're taking MAO inhibiting drugs. Magnesium, which is the superstar, twice a day. I would say 600 milligrams. I would also take taurine, T-A-U-R-I-N-E, 2,000 milligrams twice a day. It's very important for your white blood cell activation and neurological function. 100 milligrams of the B-complex twice a day, and B6, probably 150 milligrams of B6 was pyridoxine, twice a day, and vitamin B12, 1 milligram, methylated twice a day. Pantothenic acid would help. Calcium at 1,500 milligrams would help. Coenzyme Q10 at 300 milligrams would also help. And quercetin at about 1,000 milligrams twice a day. Chromium picolinate, 200 micrograms. Melatonin, 1 to 2 milligrams. And vitamin C, 3 to 5,000 milligrams a day. So that's some of the things I have found have helped the people that I've worked with. We'll take another call.
Hi, Gary. Can you please revisit the benefits and risks of baking soda? Thank you.
Well, it's always good to put some baking soda in the back of a refrigerator. It's great at trapping pathogenic activity and bacteria in a refrigerator. And, you know, you can take a little box of it and put it back in there, and every week, just throw a little box, doesn't cost much away, and start over. Also, you can take baking soda and mix it with borax, combine the two 50-50, and then put about a pencil-thick line around your entire kitchen and bathroom baseboard. Then go inside the cabinets, move everything away, and put the same baseline around the inside of your cabinets and behind your sink, behind your toilet. That kills cockroaches, big time. After about 3 weeks of doing that, you shouldn't have any cockroaches. And remember, you're not going to see the cockroaches in the daytime. They will come out at night. But baking soda and borax combined will kill them off. And baking soda also is a very important part of some of the different teeth cleaning preparations. But for most people, that's a mess when some of the toothpaste today have baking soda already in them. Okay, we'll take one more.
Question is for Gary Noll on Gary Noll's show. I just finished watching the movie Bohemian Rhapsody. I thought it was all right, probably a 7 on the scale of 1 to 10. But I wanted to get your take on the death of Freddie Mercury because, you know, in the movie, they mentioned, you know, how he's going through radiation therapy and perhaps some drug cocktails and so on. And of course, you know, they show him smoking and drinking, which probably compounded everything. But, and they said he tested HIV positive and he didn't necessarily have AIDS. I believe that it was probably the treatment that killed him. And I'm just wondering what your take is on this. All right, thanks.
I don't know what killed him. I was not following his life career. And most people remember him for his benefits that he did in He was a very dynamic and very electric personality. When he was on stage, you were drawn to him because of that. He had the it factor. Some people have it. Some are very low-key, like Sting, Frank Sinatra. You know, they have the it factor. Others will surround themselves with a whole lot of movement because they don't have the it factor, but they try to pretend they do. That's a separate issue. Elvis had the it factor. Who's going to replace Elvis? You can't. You know, who's going to replace Michael Jackson? You can't. By the way, just as an aside, there is now a documentary of two individuals who are claiming Michael Jackson, when they were young, sexually abused them. That was already tried. He was found innocent. And he is not alive to defend himself today. And what was remarkable about the documentary, they didn't interview any of the other people who also were in his life when they were younger, knew these people, were in the same environment, who could have given some balance to the presentation. That's the kind of what I would consider a hit documentary that should be challenged because it's not objective. In any case, be that as it may, Michael Jackson could never be replaced. Prince could never be replaced. They had the it factor. Like him or not, appreciate them or not, they had that. Cary Grant would walk into a room. I don't care if he walked in and read a telephone book. He'd be more interesting than 99% of all the actors today pretending that they can act. We don't put people in movies today, with rare exception, because they can act. We put them in because their personality is unbankable. They have a certain Q factor, meaning people will go to see them. So when it came to Freddie Mercury, he had that factor, and he worked hard at getting to where he was. But much like another person, Alexander McQueen, he also, in his creativity, he had that it factor, but not in his personal life. He did not have a personality to speak of. And once he became successful, he was very self-destructive. He stopped his growth as a human being on a spiritual, emotional level. He betrayed his friends, and he was so self-indulgent, pushed himself to such extremes that half of his work is some of the worst garbage ever created. And yet, because he was successful and because people were mesmerized by his meteoric rise for about 8 years, having a top salon in London, and as well as being the first English couture who was brought in, master who was brought in to the largest, most, at that point, the most Givenchy salon in Paris. And he didn't close down his other salon. He kept them both running. Instead of having two shows a year with about 39 different outfits, he was running them sometimes 12 months a year in both places. He was burning himself to death. He had no boundaries. And that's unfortunate when people have success everywhere. They do not continue to grow as human beings and use their celebrity to help others and help themselves to grow, to broaden their perspectives, to learn more about human nature and the world we live in and cultures. Some do, absolutely. The majority do not. And so they shoot up and then they crash down. And what causes them to crash down is an enormous amount of stress. Because if someone else isn't stressing them, they're stressing themselves. If you want to see some of the most unhappy people in the world, look at successful people. Now, the success can be in any field. You can be a successful hedge fund manager, like Eddie Albert, and which case he buys Sears Roebuck, I think it was Sears, either Sears or Penny's, and then takes $3 billion in profits out of Sears for himself and then ends up banking. The chain goes bankrupt, and all those stores that have been there for so long and all those employees, all gone. That's what happens on the downside when you forget the values of life, and the only value, respect, is the value of the money coming your way and your lifestyle from it. An actor in television, an actor in motion pictures, a singer, a songwriter, a politician. It doesn't matter what field you're in. Success, the way we have defined it today, is purely self-destructive. You sacrifice quality time with friends and family, the things at one time would have provided balance in your life, harmonizing your life with your loved ones, your pets, your friends. Suddenly it's, I'll get to it. Not now. I'm too busy. I got a commitment. I got a deadline. I can't. And suddenly your life is all about rushing to a deadline that didn't have to exist in the first place. We live by artificial deadlines. For what? How many people can truly say when they reached a deadline, I'm satisfied now. I have enough. No. Nope, they don't. And then it's more. And then we start taking artificial hormones if we're athletes. Not all of us, but a lot. The cheat. Look at Neil Armstrong. He had everything. What did he have? 6 or 7 of the Tour de France yellow jackets, more than anyone in history. Cheated to get all of them. And then thought by coming out on Oprah Winfrey that somehow that would all go well. No, it didn't go well. And now he lives in obscurity and has to live with the fact that he will never be trusted again. And we're a pretty forgiving nation, providing that we can see that people really are contrite and have learned something. Very few people do. So that's the philosophical answer to a person who I never met, didn't know, and knew nothing of his personal life. But as quickly as that star went up and all of the frenetic energy that went into maintaining it in a field that is extremely competitive, then what does a person do to take the edge off? Do they drink? Do they take drugs? Do they engage in unhealthy activities that only deplete their energy and immune system? Yeah. I did read that he had AIDS, but AIDS in and of itself is not a death sentence. I should know, I did a press conference called AIDS is Not a Death Sentence. The former governor of New York, David Paterson, was one of the people set on the committee to evaluate the scientific evidence that a group of 100 people with advanced AIDS had reversed their AIDS conditions, were improved in health, and had sustained it. 8 of those individuals were people I personally had worked with out of 1,200 I had worked with. But the 1,200 could come in when they chose to, but the 8 had to come in at a very advanced protocol. 24 hours a week they were in therapies by my medical team. And we reversed not just HIV, but we reversed all their AIDS-defining illnesses. They had none. And they sustained it. And so that was... But would a Freddie Mercury have benefited from it? I have never met a celebrity, and I've counseled, wow, I'm going to guess 3,000. I don't mention their names. I don't betray trust. Some have gone public, like Susan Sarandon. Others have not. Gloria Swanson, Hedy Lamarr, they went public. But most wouldn't, and I will not talk about any of the people, including Academy Award winners, royal family members, that I have reversed their disease so they got clear back to health, because some were terrified if people found out they had certain diseases, they'd lose their marketability. They'd be considered tainted meat. That's fine. But the ones that reverse disease, especially serious disease, I said I will only work with you if you start at 100% and go up from there. And one of them, one that you would all know, a household name, a nice guy, affable, and easygoing. He said, what exactly does that mean? I said, well, visualize here. Here you're on one side of the Grand Canyon. You've got some very serious diseases. On the other side is no diseases and perfect health. In between is the Grand Canyon. Based upon how you normally do things and what you normally commit to and at what level you commit, how much of a commitment would you be willing to make to reverse these conditions? And he thought for a moment, and he looked up and he said, well, he says, I got to give up coffee? Yeah. I got to give up meat? Yeah. Marijuana? Yeah. Why? Well, marijuana has 117 times the carcinogenicity of cigarette smoke. Now, I'm not condemning marijuana. I think it should be legalized, and I think every record should be purged. And I know that there are over 22,000 studies on the medicinal benefit of its essential cannabinoid oils. But when you're smoking it, that's damaging your brain in different ways and your lungs. Wow. You're asking me to give up some very important things in my life. Okay. And how important is your life? What do you mean? Well, simple question. How much value do you place on waking up tomorrow morning versus being gone forever? Where people will remember you as the nice guy, but you're not going to be in a whole lot of people's thoughts. We don't spend a lot of time looking back. We spend a lot of time who's grabbing our attention today. I've never thought about that. Well, shouldn't you? So why don't you do this? Why don't you? Here's a list of things you can no longer have. Here are the things that will take their place. Think about this. And then if you feel that you're willing to make that commitment, then you'll call me. If you can't make the commitment, don't call me. So I never heard back. The Mulholland, not Mulholland, but the other big street. And as I'm getting the juice, I look over and here's this guy. And he comes over, he says, "Hey, Gary." We go outside. And he says, "Hey, you know, I never got back to you." I said, "Yeah, that's all right. You don't have to apologize. You'll make your own choices in life." He says, "Yeah, I know." He says, "And you know, I'm feeling worse and it's getting worse, but I'm still not ready to make the changes." I said, "Okay." I said, "It's your call. I don't try to force people to make good choices. I can explain why you need to make a choice, but I can't understand the significance of it for you." And he looked at me and says, "Well, that's a little tart." And I said, "No. If you want me to try to talk you into doing something, then you should talk with your agent. You talk with your publicist. You talk with your people. You're now in that entitled place of why should I give up anything that I've earned because I don't want to feel discomfort." And do you know how many people don't make the changes in a timely manner until one day they no longer can make the changes? And then I left. Celebrities don't mean diddly squat to me. In fact, I'm rather loath of the whole concept of celebrity. It's stupid, and success is even more vile as a principle because it dehumanizes everyone who isn't. You start to look at yourself as if you're better, smarter, more attractive because you have something others don't. You're engaging in a form of etherical, ostentatious narcissism. Your conceit means you've artificially separated yourself from the people you grew up with, the neighborhoods you once lived in, the class of society that you once participated in and enjoyed. You're now one of the gods. And we make sure that everyone knows that you're special. No, you're not. I just wish one day that we had the courage to insist that once a person becomes famous, thereafter, every day, we must plant cameras in their toilets so when they get up in the morning to go to the bathroom, we see now this is the most beautiful man in the world, most beautiful woman in the world, this is the richest man in the world, and you tell me which one of those asses belongs to which person. It's so stupid, isn't it? That all this ego, who can afford a $20,000 dress, who cares? Everything you're paying, you're overpaying for. You know the price of everything and the value of nothing. Anyhow, coming back to Freddie Mercury, because it's all in the same loop. So this man, I won't tell you the outcome, because then you might guess who it is, but that was not unusual. That is absolutely 99% of the people I counsel who are famous. 99% refuse to change anything that causes them to actually have to change. They want to stay in their comfort zone, even if it kills them. But then you have people who are not famous who refuse to change. I've lost 3 friends in the last year. In the last 12 months, 3 of my friends are dead because they didn't want to change. If you doubt me, speak with Lou Ann Panessa, because I ask her, call these people. See if they're willing to change. They weren't. So they'd rather die than change. Isn't that a harsh reality? Yeah, but it's the truth of most people. Most people. That's why we are such a sick nation physically with obesity and diabetes and depression. It doesn't have to be that way. Hope that answers that question. Once again, I don't know how long my answers are going to be. It depends upon the question. We'll squeeze one more in here. Go ahead.
So, Gary, this is John. Thank you for the service that you offer us. I have a health question. My question is, you have suggested taking magnesium. And magnesium is a very important element. So when I go to the health food store, I notice there are different types of magnesium. Magnesium citrate, magnesium stearate, magnesium so-and-so. So I don't know if these are all the same or we should lean towards one. Let us know. Thank you for the service. Have a good day.
All magnesiums will work to some degree, but they're not all equal. For years, one of the most popular selling magnesiums was coral reef calcium and magnesium. That had the least efficacy. Your best, as far as the highest quality, is magnesium citrate, C-I-T-R-A-T-E, but also magnesium chelate is good. Magnesium comes in different forms, and you should simply do this. Look at the magnesium you're offered. Then go up and look at Google magnesium, and then look at best absorbability. There are different forms, but at least 7 popular forms. I suggest either chelate or citrate for high-level magnesium absorption. Okay? Well, we'll squeeze one more in. That was a quick, easy one.
This question is for Gary Null. My name is Kristen. I grew up in a place with beautiful rivers and lakes and the town swimming pool 1 block from my home. So I spent all of my free time as a child playing in the water and the sun. I am so grateful for these wonderful childhood days, but unfortunately, I ruined my skin. I am now 50 years old and have been seeing my dermatologist since I've been about 30. She cuts at least 3 spots off of my body every 6 months. I have had well over 100 dysplastic and or precancerous moles cut from my body over the past 20 years. I don't mind so much as it saves my life. I stay out of the sun as best as I can. I don't use sunscreen as I have heard it is toxic. I take vitamin D to compensate for my very little sun exposure. And here is what I am wondering if Gary can help or give me some insight. Is there anything I can do nutritionally or supplementally or topically to help with this issue? What can I do to heal my skin and counteract the damage that has already been done? So,
okay, you're,
if Gary
you're,
has
turn
some
it down.
Insight,
you're not alone. Millions of people have precancerous lesions. At least you don't have malignant melanoma. You may have had squamous cell or basal cell carcinoma, which are much more serious. But I won't go through all the 4 stages of melanoma. Instead, I'll go right to what you could do. First, I would suggest beta-1,3-D-glucan, G-L-U-C-A-N. It can stimulate your immune system. You have to build up the immune system. So the key to fighting cancer is strengthen your immune system. And also coenzyme Q10 improves cellular oxygenation, and that helps with your immune system. Dimethylglycine improves cellular oxygenation, and the more oxygenation your cells get, the less vulnerable they are to cancer. The essential fatty acids like primrose oil is very good to protect your skin and your cells. Garlic, 2x a day, 3 times a day, enhances your immune function, especially black garlic. Histidine, H-I-S-T-I-D-I-N-E, that helps increase your skin's immunity to damage from the sun's rays. Coconut oil, flaxseed oil, hemp oil are all good. having a shake in the morning with the Wobenzym enzymes, that's W-O-B-E-N-Z-Y-M, is very important. It's a powerful free radical scavenger, and that helps reduce inflammation and helps stop cancer. Quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N, that's a flavonoid that has anti-cancer properties. Selenium also. Onions and garlic give you that. Vitamin A at 10, 20, 30,000 units a day. That's a powerful protector of free radicals, especially in the skin. Vitamin B complex, vitamin C, a very strong anti-cancer. You'd have to be taking it around 10,000 milligrams a day. Maitake mushrooms, M-A-I-T-A-K-E, at about 5,000 milligrams. Reishi, R-E-I-S-H-I, and shiitake mushrooms. Pycnogenol, that I discussed yesterday, at about 100 milligrams. And also zinc would be good. Acidophilus, or any good probiotic, to about 50 billion probiotic going in your body a day, generally throughout the day. And L-cysteine and L-methionine, they detoxify the body. And N-acetylcysteine is good too. Herbs would be burdock, dandelion, and horsetail. Astragalus has strong anti-cancer properties. Capsicum, which is from cayenne, bilberry, ginger, golden seal, turmeric, those are good. And the seeds and peel of the Chinese cucumber inhibit cancer cell growth. And skin cancers can really respond good to poultices combined with comfrey, pau d'arco, ragwort, and wood sage. And ginkgo biloba and pau d'arco are also good, especially on the skin, for the skin. So those are the things, along with lots of juices, generally a beta-carotene-rich sweet potatoes, squash, spinach, cruciferous vegetables like broccoli and Brussels sprouts I mentioned earlier in the program, and kale and cabbage and turnips, and having a grapefruit lemon juice each day. That'll do some good. We're out of time. I want to thank you and all your calls, and you can call and leave a message at 862-800-6805. Have a nice day, everyone.